Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm your host, Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on a somewhat windy evening here in our beloved city at the head of the Mississippi River, if you will. A lot of things going on. We're going to continue tonight. Our colleague, Mr. Allen, will probably not be with us. He's tied up in some meetings. He said he thought he may be here by 9 or 9:15, but by that time, we will basically set the tone for the program. But anyways, I'm again your host, Ron Edwards. A very interesting couple of days here in our beloved Minneapolis since the election. A new mayor, Councilman Jacob Frey, a gentleman of the Confederacy, if you will, born in Virginia, if you will. Media didn't touch on it very much here in the Twin Cities for whatever reasons, if you know what I mean. Again, you know, congratulations to Melvin Carter III, becoming the first African-American in the history of the city of St. Paul, the second largest city here in the state of Minnesota, as he becomes mayor, joining his mother as one of the most significant political operatives, if you will, in Ramsey County. His mother, a commissioner of the Ramsey County, five-member Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, if you will. They join Congressman Keith Ellison of Minneapolis, congressman of the 5th Congressional District, if you will, whose son, Jeremiah Ellison, joins his father and his mother, who is a member of the Minneapolis Gannon elected position. So you have the Ellison and Carter families in our cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul presiding, quote-unquote, under the political power of the African-American community. Now, never get confused that means that even as mayor of the city of St. Paul, that Melvin Carter III will do anything too radical, if you will. St. Paul, by the way, a more conservative city in some regards than the sister city of Minneapolis, and particularly in that the St. Paul is considered to be more of a Catholic city, as whereas Minneapolis is looked upon with having a strong Scandinavian, Norwegian, Swedish, Finnish, Danish configuration, if you will. Lutheran Church, very strong here in Minneapolis. Catholic Church, very strong in the city of St. Paul. We want to share with you tonight on the Don and Ron program, as I said just minutes ago, our colleague, Mr. Allen, will probably not be able to join us tonight. And we would like to certainly have opened the telephone lines in light of a meeting that we had left here in downtown Minneapolis. And we think it is important to share with our listening audience locally, nationally, and internationally, if you will. The meeting was a joint venture, really never having taken place before, if you will. The sheriff of Hennepin County, which is the largest Minnesota county by population and is home to the city of Minneapolis, which would be the county seat, Sheriff Richard Stanek, a former Minneapolis police captain, now in his third term as sheriff of county, and the city of Minneapolis and its police department and its police chief, Madeira Elredondo, first African-American to be appointed chief of the police department in the city of Minneapolis. a joint coming together held at the jail facility, very modern place in downtown Minneapolis, in the heart of the so-called government area. This had been a highly touted and highly expected conference, if you will, of the civilian groups that are working on behalf of both departments, the Sheriff's Department and the City of Minneapolis Police Department, in dealing with community policing, if you will, such things as that. And we were invited to be in attendance, a group of including officers of both departments and et cetera, over 50 individuals in place, if you will. Procedural justice, one of the key issues spoken to by Chief Arredondo. Sheriff Stank talked in terms of Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, HCSO, the sensory policing, if you will. Sheriff Stank has been a very long time advocate for that. But what came up that we made a decision on the Ron and Don program? Because of the level of criminal activity and violence, mayhem, broken homes, broken spirits, broken hearts, and et cetera, that we wanted to share with our listening audience. And hopefully, Mr. Allen will be back next week. We can open up the phone line. We wanted to share the discussion that took place on two specific items. As we said, the meeting, a two-hour meeting, and they pretty much held to the agenda. Started right around 5, or 2 minutes to 5, and ended at about 7:11, 7:12, if you will. And again, this was at the, and let me just get the proper name, if you will, the public safety facility in downtown Minneapolis. A lot of discussion emerged almost suddenly about the problem of opiates, slice drugs, everything from cocaine to methamphetamine, you know, to heroin, to all the other ugly drugs that are saturating all communities of color now. And when I say communities of color, I mean the white community also. In fact, we had some statistics in what was a closed meeting, if you will. We had been saying this for about a month, that there wouldn't be anybody busting in and talking in terms of, you know, that they had something to say. If you weren't invited, you weren't getting in, and that's just the way it went. There was no incident. There was no problem in that respect, so we're not indicating that there was any disruption. A significant cross-section, all commanders of the Sheriff's Department, all commanders of the Minneapolis Police Department in attendance, if you will. For those of you that are now attempt to make it appear that you didn't know anything about anything, the letter of invite directly from the sheriff of the county, the high sheriff, and the chief of the department, at that time the newly appointed Madera Arredondo, chief of the Minneapolis Department, went out in October, if you will, actually almost early September. And it was a direct invitation from Chief Arredondo. He basically indicated, would like to invite you to join the MPD procedural justice team, as well as the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office Community Advisory Council, for a joint meeting to learn more about the procedural justice unit of the MPD and the great work they are doing. This specific unit is under 32-year veteran Charles Adams II, if you will, of the department. He is commander of the units that deal with procedural justice, also deal with, tragically and unfortunately, community response team, a elite, well-trained community response team that was put together by Chief Janae Harto in the late winter of 2016, if you will, under the direct supervision of then Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, now retired, a 30-some-year veteran, as was our Commander Adams. As we said, all command staff of both the departments in play, if you will, a excellent discussion. But it was when, and I thought I would just send this out and, you know, give kind of a heads up, maybe even a warning, because I have to say that I found it interesting that there was a more than troubling number of some of you out there who have, you know, been the recipients of significant dollars, if you will, to allegedly deal with public safety, fight crime, and et cetera. In fact, some of you are talking in terms of putting together some recommendations for the mayor and the chief of police and et cetera. And so I, you know, took a look at the communication that all of you got, that you know who I'm talking about. And with the exception of V.J. Smith, original president of MADDATS, and also obviously the local president of the Minneapolis MADDATS, he is also affiliated with a number of other organizations. I would prefer to have V.J. Smith indicate what those are. Some of them are very selective law enforcement institutions. There were some other folks there, if you will, that are a part of Chief Arredondo's the community advisory council. He has an advisory council. Well comprised of, you know, knowledgeable people, if you will. And so when the question and the issue of the opiates and guns that are ravishing actually the city and parts of the county, it was very enlightening for this commentator to hear the discussions by both the sheriff and the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department with regards to their expectations. Now, when I continue to review the names that were specifically invited, and it was made known to them in their specific operational councils, committees, and et cetera, the importance of this gathering, if you will. And, of course, it was more than optional for a significant group of individuals. The conversation was intense, and it was for real. There were some numbers that were just startling with regards to the numbers of overdoses, if you will, that are gripping our city and our county. And there were also some statistical numbers that were just frightening. And we should be very blessed in many respects, even though we've lost over 150 just this year alone of human beings who have OD'd, if you will, dead on arrival with regards, and then hundreds more that have been saved by first responders, both police and fire, if you will. In fact, there was as discussion going on now to incorporate every possible fire department, be they professional, permanent employment or volunteer departments, if you will. Numbers, let me give you an example of what came out of this late afternoon, early evening. Columbus County in Columbus, Ohio, is reporting that they will hit the number of over 800 human beings who have passed over to the other side. In other words, they are deceased. A county just south of Columbus that is more of a rural county and et cetera, 560, if you will. Now, we know that Native American leadership in our state, particularly the northern reservations, if you will, of Red Lake, Fond du Lac, White Earth specifically, and others, Leech Lake, have expressed extreme concern and are, in fact, working tirelessly to deal with the academic, the problem of addiction and et cetera on the reservation. Some of that came for discussion. If anyone is interested, I assume that they will talk to folks connected with their organizations who were invited to be there and to hear the plan with regards to this national emergency. Now, just because Donald Trump and Governor Christie indicated it was a national emergency and they didn't act on it means that there are enclaves, there are jurisdictions in the United States, such as here in Minnesota and specifically Hennepin County and the city of Minneapolis, that have not taken this seriously. I want to impress that upon you, our listening audience, for those of you that may have questions next week. If Mr. Allen has returned by then, open the phone lines and et cetera. I will be talking about it a little bit more on my television program here in the Twin Cities, if you will. And I will be talking about it clearly on this program, irrespective if the phone lines are open or not. And the reason definitely is driven by the number of fatalities and the number of overdoses and et cetera and the kind of damage that health, if you will, and mental. Now, we also were into a very, very interesting discussion about mental health. In fact, one of the top mental health individuals, Mark Anderson, was present, certainly his guiding hand. That Mark Anderson, if you will, who had kept the attention focused within the sheriff's council, the community advisory council. In the case of the restorative justice and other factors, it was quite clear that Chief Arredondo and Commander Charles Adams have been working closely. There's a lot of discussion going on. We, as a journalist and as a Department of Justice observer, have warned that there is a plan afoot to begin significant arrest, indictments, if you will, and incarceration of those who are continuing to push this poison on our respective communities, as well as the whole issue with guns. It's just deplorable, the number of guns right here within the corporate boundaries of the city of Minneapolis. Just this year alone, it will be probably close to 1,400 to 1,300. In North Minneapolis alone, it's now reaching basically 800. That's just one part of our city, 800 guns recovered since the 1st of January of 2017. And so I repeat again my concern as an observer, but also as a member of the community response group, the group that unfortunately is called upon to go to the sites of the fatalities, if you will, the violence in the streets, the gunshots going out, and people losing loved ones, and et cetera. We have been extremely disturbed by much of the information over the last year and a half, well, almost 2 years. It really started around March of 2016 when individuals affiliated with the office of the outgoing mayor, Betsy Hodges, were putting in operation a plan to provide significant amounts of money to people that clearly did not have the best interest of the communities in dealing with the problems of guns and opiates and et cetera. We all know here in Minnesota that it was the death of the beloved prince over a year ago that caused a real escalation. It also allowed Sheriff Richard Stanek to really tighten the screws and Chief Janae Harto before her departure, if you will, and now Chief Madera Arredondo, have indicated that there will be consequences. I'm not able to specifically go into the actual details for reasons of security and confidentiality, but Thursday before last, there was a very interesting meeting of the community support team of Minneapolis Police Department. A group of pretty knowledgeable people, a mixture of civilians and police, if you will. Discussion that came up with regards to the quietness and the silence that is emanating from so many of our leadership and organizations, though we don't have that many organizations left anymore in the black community. It's not like it was 25, 30 years ago. But what became disturbing in the meeting of the police community support team was some folks, you know, being extremely quiet as the issue of guns specifically, and opiates, and the tie-in, and the caravans, if you will, the network of trafficking that is coming in. There's a lot of discussion going on right now about sex trafficking, and it has been, you know, amplified because of the Super Bowl, if you will. But in the meeting this evening, you know, sponsored by the Sheriff's Department and the MPD under their respective leaders, Sheriff Richard Stanek, Chief Madero Arredondo, it was very interesting when a number of white citizens who are on the committees, we will not identify them by name because of the concern with regards to retaliatory action by drug forces that are operating in our local vicinities, but they raised some serious questions about the information that is being talked about within law enforcement and the retired law enforcement about the network of drug trafficking, which is already being monitored and has moved into the Twin Cities. It's amazing what people think that they can do in a 10 or 11 day period, which is basically the period of quote unquote putting on the Super Bowl and having the activities and folks talk in terms of different vineyards, if you will. We heard some announcements just a couple of days ago that there will be a big party and coming out at the Armory, if you will, at the hotels and et cetera. And what the individual said this evening in this closed meeting was that must be addressed. It must be addressed immediately. It was their plan. Both Chief Arredondo and High Sheriff Richard Stanek were somewhat guarded, if you will, that there definitely is a plan. DEA, Homeland Security, if you will, ATF, are locked in. In fact, they are locked in on a group of individuals who have been playing a very dangerous game for the last couple of years, and that is appearing and speaking in such a way as that they are concerned about what is happening in community. When, in fact, surveillance, and some of this, as we said a couple of programs ago, emerged when there were intercepts by a joint task force of the New York City Police Department and federal agencies in New York City, and some folks carrying identification credentials indicating that they were involved in working within the city of Minneapolis, for the city of Minneapolis, that conversations were intercepted by the state federal state task force in New York City on the week of the 4th of July with regards to drug activity, weapons activity, providing fresh drugs and et cetera, and targeting basically, and it's amazing sometimes to hear, you know, hear these people talk, how they actually have stated amongst themselves how much money they expect to make within a 10 or 11 day period, combination of sex trafficking, but more importantly, drug trafficking, if you will. Agreements have been reached with a couple of the cartels in Mexico, bringing a significant amount, if you will, of all kinds of different drugs, all illegal, basically routing not only through Chicago and Milwaukee, but also utilizing the track up from Dallas to Wichita to Kansas City and up through Des Moines and into the Twin Cities. And I don't know that these people realize that they are being monitored and have been monitored for quite some time. And we have said that we don't think that folks know that, you know, federal grand juries both, and by the way, we will indicate this to you, that federal grand juries in a couple of different locations, not only centered just here in the Twin Cities in the state of Minnesota, but in other jurisdictions, some of which we just touched on, if you weren't listening, that's unfortunate, but these programs can be recaptured by on demand. And so it was interesting today to see the leadership of Chief Arredondo and Sheriff Richard Stanek in talking in terms of the drug/opiate problems. In fact, at one point, the sheriff called upon his top person, the chief called upon his top person, who has under their jurisdiction the specific operational units that are tracking both gun and drug activity and conspiracy and et cetera. Of course, for those that were invited to be there, and I certainly have reason to believe on tonight's program that there are clearly some folks that are already feeling the heat, if you will. We've had a number of homicides over the last 5 or 6 months of individuals who are affiliated with different entities within city structure, if you will. Lives have been taken execution style here in the Twin Cities because of what folks think is a significant conspiracy, if you will, to make a significant financial, I hate to use this word, a financial killing during the Super Bowl activities. Now, folks have been working on this, as we said before. It was no accident of the intercept by the Joint Federal and State Task Force in New York City. They had been listening in for quite some time. Unfortunately, the country hicks from the Twin Cities, particularly Minneapolis, went out to party, play, and do their dealings, if you will, not understanding that some of the people that they were talking to were already wired up, if you will, and were the subjects of significant, very significant, surveillance and et cetera. And this came at a time when some folks had been utilizing what they thought was the gathering of information from law enforcement people by pretending to be a part of the functioning activities, if you will, passing that information back to higher-ups in places like Chicago, Milwaukee, Des Moines, St. Louis, Kansas City, and et cetera. And so, as we said tonight, because we doubt that there will be anything that you will see in your local paper, though it is quite clear that a documentary is being done here in the Twin Cities with regards to the drug and gun trafficking that is going on. It's too bad that people assume and take everybody else for a fool, if you will. But it took place. It happened. Both the sheriff and the chief of the department, the people that they invited, if you will, some of you know who you are, and you know specifically why it was that you decided that you could not take the chance of being in a meeting where you may be called out, if you will, questions may be raised. But those questions are already being raised. It is time, certainly by the beginning of 2018, it will be time for an audit of the monies that were coming through, the recast monies. You don't want to talk about recast. The Bloomberg monies, which initially representatives of a certain segment of Minneapolis city government, basically operating out of the health department and other offices, if you will, pretended that there was no Bloomberg money being used for anything to fight crime and violence in the street and et cetera. But for those of you that listen and pay attention and can retain information, if you will, you know, and that your mind isn't so clouded by drugs and et cetera, that you well remember some of the declarations that were being made in the spring of 2016, not 2017, but as far back as 2016, about how the problem of violence and et cetera was going to be dealt with, and that there were these individuals who were going to be funded. They were going to come forward, if you will. They would provide the both effective leadership and effective corrective actions and et cetera. And then this conversation enhanced itself in January and February, if you will. And then we had people talking in terms of the modification of policing in the communities and et cetera. But people weren't being honest. And this is a serious situation tonight. And the seriousness of it, again, is reflected in that meeting that took place at the public safety building behind closed doors with a heavy presence. Oh, it did not go unnoticed by yours truly, that there was a presence, if you will, of sheriff's deputies who were clearly there to make sure that if you weren't invited, that if you didn't know the right password when you came slamming through the door, that there was something that was there to accommodate you for, quote unquote, possibly a long stay, if you will. As I said, on behalf of my community, the African-American community, I am saddened that some of you folks who are trying to get money, be it from the foundations or the United Way, but it is basically the foundations that you have been talking to and waxing to and et cetera. As we said before, we are now coming up at the 4 years of Mayor Betsy Hodges ends as mayor of the city, that it is now time for a audit and a spelling out of what GBI, a group that was identified as being extremely effective and very much involved in working, quote unquote, with young men and women who were on the wrong path and et cetera, if you will. Well, this commentator, this journalist, remembers the discussions back in February and March of this year, and definitely back in 2016. In fact, I can well remember a meeting at the Urban League of Minneapolis in which folks were waxing around the table and how they were approaching and dealing with the problem. And then a couple weeks later, another meeting of the so-called GBI group was held. Individuals stood up and talked in terms of how they were making a difference on the streets of the city. And, of course, it was interesting to see how many of them had just bought new automobiles. And who also did not go into certain parts of the city and et cetera. And it was all puzzling because we were listening closely as a longtime observer, if you will, to the folks talking in terms of how they were meeting head on the problem, how they were going to bring order to chaos, if you will, peace to violence, if you will, certainly compassion to the tragedies that have become a part of our, the violence on the streets of our city. And so we want to continue to hammer, for the purposes of tonight's program, for the next 20-some minutes or et cetera. And like we said, we're sorry that we don't have our phone lines open tonight, but as I said, Mr. Allen will be returning, and hopefully next week or the week after, we will open the phone lines. We know there are folks that have questions out there. You should have questions, particularly when you talk about the number of people in the African-American and other communities of color who are being so violently affected by a combination of guns and drugs, slash opiates, and et cetera. And so I'm just hoping that as leadership begins a series of meetings, according to their press releases and Facebooks and et cetera, that they will meet and put together a proposal for the new mayor-elect and the city council, if you will, on what direction the community should be going and who should be in that leadership role. Now, here's my take, particularly in light of certain reflections that were made tonight in a closed meeting, if you will, top law enforcement and civilians, is that basically it'll be the same people who carried out the charade starting in March of 2016, talking in terms that as the money came in from Bloomberg and from the federal government and dealing with, and by the way, I mean, these folks that have been so much involved in talking about mental health, you know, I'm waiting for a report, if you will, which is about a year and a half overdue, from North Point, if you will, Stella West and her people up there in that particular operation, as well as we certainly need to hear something, you know, from our UROC, University of Minnesota, my good friend Dr. Cicchetti, who has been researching the heck out of black people ever since he arrived here from Rochester, New York, not Rochester, Minnesota, not from the Mayo Clinic, but from Rochester, New York, where he experimented for years on the black community there, particularly the black community that resided in the public housing units of Rochester, New York. In fact, I would certainly at some point like to hear an evaluation from former president of the Urban League, Clarence Hightower. I can well remember Mr. Hightower was offered the opportunity and certainly took it to go to Rochester, New York, to examine the Cicchetti project, Dr. Cicchetti's project. I, in fact, well remember a series of meetings at the Urban League of Minneapolis at that time that was talking in terms of how the power community of the black community would be addressing the arrival of Dr. Cicchetti, if you will, and the importance of UROC as a experimental facility. Yes, experimental facility. It reminded me of the history of the special government program that operated out of Harrison Grade School back in the early 1970s that led to serious mental and health problems for young African-American children of that particular period of time. Some of those individuals, those victims, quote unquote, would be now in their 40s, if you will. If it had not been for a very courageous African-American woman by the name of Elizabeth Samuels, who worked for the American Red Cross, she in fact lost her job and position with the American Red Cross when she helped reveal the quote-unquote poisoning of young African-American children. Sounded just like many years later Flint, Michigan, and many years earlier the Tuskegee experiment. You can't find any historical documentation. Oh, there is documentation in the files of the Department of Justice, and there is documentation for those of you who are sitting out there saying, you know, why is this man being negative? Why is he doing this? And et cetera. You know, it's not negativism. It's history. It's fact. and it may explain the psychological, I repeat again, the psychological, physical, if you will, our conditioning of a community that has been severely damaged over many, many, many years. See, we were here and very active, if you will, in the early 1960s, when there started to be discussion about the Negro problem, if you will, and then as the city exploded, both Minneapolis and St. Paul, there was discussion about how to deal with the Negro problem. But then in, what was it, 73, Time magazine shows a picture of then the late Governor Wendell Anderson, and he's holding up a trout or something and talking about Minnesota, the land of milk and honey, and et cetera. And folks started coming here. First, it was really from Gary, and then Detroit, if you will, and then Omaha. And then they started pouring in from Chicago by the mid-1970s. And people weren't paying any attention on how the structures of organizational availability, and when I say organizational availability, these organizations that had the resources to nurture your community, if you will. That's where the Harrison Project, oh yes, there are some of you tonight who were little children, and the dosages and et cetera were put in your milk at Harrison School. They were getting ready to move it to some other schools within the so-called heavy black concentration of schools, if you will. Again, if it had not been for a courageous woman, the late Elizabeth Samuels, who lost her job as an employee and a member, the liaison person for the Red Cross of America, if you will. That also came at a time when, see, we need to go back, particularly in light, again, of the discussion tonight behind, you know, closed doors about opiates, guns, and et cetera. See, we also, as a historian and activist, we go back also that at the same time that there was medicating of little black children to the extent that it affected them for the rest of their lives, creating all kinds of health problems, but also creating mental health problems, if you will. We have never received, and again, because of the actions that were taken against Elizabeth Samuels, American Red Cross worker, if you will, liaison person working out of the Phyllis Wheatley Community Center, which looks like it's on the verge of going under. There was this whole project in experimental medicine dealing with sickle cell. For those of you who have your computers, that you consider yourself to be on top of the electronic game, that you know how to go into your computers using the little mouse, if you will, and call the information up. Go back to 1971, 72, 73, and the whole city of Minneapolis, particularly in North Minneapolis, and go back and take a look at the two projects that the American Red Cross was very much a part of, wink, wink, endorsing, and et cetera. The Harrison Project, the involvement in medication put in, it was put in the milk of the little babies, little black babies, if you will. In fact, it cost a African-American educator who was actually in line to actually be the first black superintendent of schools, was not going to be Dr. Richard Green, who ultimately attained that position. It was someone else, but we will not go into that unless someone can send us a text or a message and indicate that they know who it was. If you will, that man lost his career and et cetera as an outgrowth of being a party and not speaking out when the federal government, the Department of Health and Education, came into Minneapolis and said, we want to do some experimental medicines, and et cetera. Now, Dr. Jachetti, back to Dr. Jachetti, in that period of time a decade ago when he arrived from Rochester, one of the things that he said to some of black leaders who met that night at the Urban League is that he knew that you knew about the quote-unquote heinousness, if you will, the despiteful and very dangerous medical experiments that were going on, and that some of you individuals had been around in the 1970s and, in fact, had opposed the revelations that brought forward by Samuels and others, if you will, of us, as it pertains to what was going on. But it was also the Sickle Cell Project. And there are many, and for unfortunately, there are many who are no longer with us. It very well reminded many of us in the 1970s of the Tuskegee experiments of the 1930s. There has never been a report on that either. We said the reports on the Harrison Project and the Sickle Cell Project conducted by the University of Minnesota School of Medicine and et cetera, experimental medicine and et cetera. It's one of the reasons that there are some of us old timers, if you will, that are not necessarily that enthusiastic when we hear people talk in terms of UROC and experimental medicine and all those kinds of things. By the way, in the back part of the UROC building up until a number of months ago was an office, and in that office were the files of those African-American mothers and their children just in the last couple of years who were a part of an experimental activity under the direct management of the University of Minnesota. And again, our good friend, Dr. Jachetti, if you have a need to get a better understanding of Dr. Jachetti and experimental medicine and et cetera, we have always encouraged over the last 5 years for folks to acquire a copy of the book entitled Medical Apartheid by Dr. Washington, if you will, a brilliant African-American woman, a researcher, and et cetera, who really put her stuff together and the publishing of her book. I well remember how so many within the white medical community attempted to slam her, if you will, to disavow her, if you will, to indicate that she was nothing but a troublemaker, and et cetera. All of this ties together. Discussion that went on tonight in a facility, a public safety facility, secure facility, under reasonable guard, if you will. And the response of two of the leading law enforcement leaders, Nadella Arredondo, chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, and Sheriff Richard Stanek, who first sounded the alert. I can well remember a couple of meetings that Sheriff Stanek had at the church of Bishop Howell, if you will. And I can well remember watching some of those that, you know, some of us clearly know are drug barons, if you will, drug overlords. Take a good game, if you will, talk a good game, if you will, and continue to poison, quote-unquote, the communities of the African-American persuasion and others, if you will. I think there's going to be a problem for some folks in the coming months, because I don't think that Chief Arredondo or Sheriff Stanek and their support group, which are their officers and special agents and et cetera, are going to continue to let these deaths take place. And as we said before, it is because of the tenaciousness, I have to say it, of Sheriff Richard Stanek, that we are not recording here in the Twin Cities, in Minneapolis and in Hennepin County, the kind of numbers that they are recording right now as we speak, in Columbus, Ohio, and in a county just north of Columbus County, where you have almost 1,400 deaths just this year alone, my friends, from overdoses, from opiates and all the drugs that are a part of that, and et cetera. By the way, we certainly need to give a shout out to the chief, John Feudal, the chief of the Minneapolis Fire Department, who is really on top of his game. Because one of the things that, unfortunately, I have reviewed and am aware of is that really 90% of the time when you talk in terms of first responders, and for those of you that are taping or can always go back and know how to retrieve our programs on demand and et cetera, is 90% of the first responders, and not enough credit has been given to the current chief of the Minneapolis Fire Department for significant actions and protocols that he has put in place and which has saved many, 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 many lives. And in fact, people really need to reach out to the head of the Minneapolis Police Department's homicide unit, Lieutenant Zimmerman, and et cetera, because maybe they can make you understand some horrifying stories of what is seen in situations in which there's both a fatal overdose or there is a level of overdose that creates all kinds of psychological, clinical problems, and et cetera. Let us go back to the history for those of you that talk about, you know, the history and et cetera. And some of you get to talking sometimes and you don't stop to think how old you are. You couldn't have been here unless you are the reconception and et cetera. But when you talk about the Harrison Project and how many little black babies, boys and girls, young children, in the grades of kindergarten through what would have been back in those days, the sixth grade at Harrison School, right there in North Minneapolis, right there on Glenwood, if you will. In fact, it's ironic. I don't say much about it because I have friends in the field of education that work tirelessly to try to deal with the current problem and disaster and genocide. Yes, genocide that is at play, but I think how ironic it is that Harrison now is being used as a detention facility for the incorrigibles, if you will, for those that have mental problems and et cetera. And I think back to 1971, 72, and 73, when our federal government was experimenting and medicines and et cetera, poisoning and the corrupting of the system of little black children. For those of you that are sitting by your radio tonight, think back to the days when you were a student in 1971, 72, and 73, if you were at Harrison School. There were a couple of other schools that had been cited. There was some preliminary distribution of this drug. By the way, the federal government never talked in terms of what this mind-altering drug was really all about. But there are, if you're interested and you go in under the Freedom of Information Act, you may be able to retain it. But there is, and I'll at some point give you the specific pages, but there is a segment in the book entitled Medical Apartheid, in which actually is talking about the poisoning of young African-American children in a place called Minneapolis and in a neighborhood called the North Side and in a Pacific facility, an educational facility called Harrison School. And so when I think about Harrison, the current Harrison, if you will, and I think how ironic and tragic it is that that place now basically deals, and here's what's so tragic about it. They now deal with a lot of the heirs of those who were babies and et cetera, who have grown into adulthood and who had children and et cetera, you know. And the combination of then those that were also coming to us from Gary and Chicago and Omaha and Des Moines and Detroit and et cetera, and you put all of that together and you shake it up like, you know, you're shaking up a martini, if you will, maybe you will get a better feeling for why there is an enormous health problem in the African-American communities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Oh, you can dismiss it, my friends, tonight. Amen. Nobody want to hear that old junk and et cetera, et cetera. Until you are either personally affected, if you will, if unfortunately you are, quote-unquote, messing around with, you know, with the thing, with the skag and et cetera, or if you lose a loved one who didn't know what they were getting into, who were smoking up, shooting up, and et cetera. By the way, for those that smoke it and et cetera, that stuff is permanently inside of your body and in your chest and your lungs and et cetera. And it is an excruciating illness, if you will, that brings about excruciating death. But we don't have enough discussion. Now, the reason I say that in the last 4 minutes of tonight's program is that, see, UROC, University of Minnesota's experimental facility, that is still actually under the medical authorization and medical authority of Dr. Cecchetti and the different projects at the University of Minnesota's schools of medicine, psychology, psychiatry, and et cetera. If it could ever be uncovered that these projects, these special programs and et cetera are part of the reason for so much mental health conditions that exist within the African-American community. I'm trying to talk as, oh, kind of as plain as possible. Oh, we can play the game and go into the deep medical terminology and et cetera, but unfortunately also given the educational companionship, if you will, that is lacking in our community. So many of our people are not well enough versed. But if listening closely and we speak in a tongue that is consistent with where one is at academically, psychologically, if you will, and et cetera, people will begin to understand. And there are many of y'all out there tonight. We are seeing the text messages as we've been talking, who now think back, some of you with tears in your eyes, that period of time when you were a young student at Harrison Grade School in North Minneapolis, there just off of Glenwood Avenue, if you will. And you should have tears. You should be concerned. And you should be equally concerned with the warning that was given by the sheriff of Hennepin County, Richard Stanek, about 4 years ago. The things that he said, what he tried to warn. He tried to warn all communities, irrespective of race, creed, color, national origin. But the powerful cartels, the people who were involved on the dark side, if you will, were able to mount, quote unquote, a opposition to make folks believe that even the sheriff of this county and other law enforcement, such as now Chief Arredondo, didn't know what they were talking about. We'll be back with you next week. Hopefully, we'll try real hard to open the phone lines. We will talk about this continuously on our television program, Black Focus, if you will, because we are, in fact, facing a local and national crisis. In conclusion, let me say, remembering those that lost any sense of future, coming out of Harrison School and some of the other programs being managed by the University of Minnesota, we pray for you tonight, and we pray for those that are currently affected and under, quote-unquote, the heavy hand of the drug activity and epidemic that is killing our community. Again, we'll be back next week. I'm Ron Edwards of the Ron and Don Program. God bless you, Black Minnesota and Black America. Stay strong. Good night.